Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Peace Wanakism on the Voluntary Virtues Network every Thursday at 1 p.m. And you could also find me on theconsciousresistance.com and theseedsofliberty.com. So today we have Betty Ann Camagna, who is a voluntarist, anarchist, anti-war advocate. And more importantly, the reason we're going to talk is she's a peaceful parenting, unschooling mama of five kids, a 32-year-old, a 30-year-old, a 27-year-old, 14-year-old, and a 13-year-old. And so she's coming to us from Florida. And so she unschooled her kids in the 1980s before YouTube, Wikipedia, Google, if you can imagine that, before the internet, before Skype, before long distance calls were free, as they are today, right? As the era of the landline, long extension cord phones, right?
Yeah.
So she's greatly influenced by the work of John Holt, and yes. So she used a lot of his books and writings to help her in her unschooling endeavors. So we're going to ask her all about that because I'm sure a lot of people, even today, a lot of mothers are having problems unschooling and homeschooling, even with all the information available on the internet. Not to mention, how can a person do it when unschooling and homeschooling was even less popular without the internet? It's really an amazing achievement. So Betty Ann, thank you for coming on the show.
I'm happy to be here.
So why don't you start us off with maybe a little bit of your background and how you came to the philosophy of homeschooling and unschooling. And I remember you told me before that when you did it, there wasn't even the term unschooling, right? It wasn't even around. So tell us a little bit about the history, how you came to learn about it.
Well, we do attachment parenting, so we really believe in meeting our children's needs and not forcing or coercing them from the time they're born. We know they're little humans. And so as they grew, we never had like bedtimes or they ate when hungry, they slept when tired. We always went with their unique flow. And because every child that's born is unique and different. So when it came time for school years, we knew there wasn't going to be a one size fit all. We just knew that wasn't going to be good for our children because children are just so unique. They all learn different at different times. They all have different learning styles. So it kind of just was an extension of our attachment parenting and peaceful parenting. And so if you send your child to school, you you're kind of forcing them to wake up at a certain time and you're forcing them to, a lot of children don't want to go. They don't want to be separated from their parents at such a young age and they would cry. I've seen kids cry. They don't want to go to school. And so that just, I'm like, there has to be a different way. So we decided we were going to homeschool and take it from there. We didn't really know what that looked like. All we had was Growing Without Schooling magazine, and we had the John Holt books, which were very beneficial. You would go to your library and, search for things, which there wasn't very much information back then. And so we kind of got the philosophy that just like our children learned how to nurse, to wean themselves, to crawl and then walk, to talk, we didn't teach our children those things. It's like children are born hungry to learn. They want to know about the world around them. And so we just kind of took that whole philosophy and just every stage and age, it just built from there. And so when they start being curious about letters and letter sounds and seeing words and, wanting to know what they say. It's just, learning is such a natural thing when it's not forced upon a child or, trying to make them do things against their will. And so the main premise is enriching your child's world, like enriching what they're into, cheering them on. And that's the main premise of unschooling. And so you just do it through the grades, what would be grade school years, into the middle school years, into the high school years, and then they just leave the nest soaring because they've never lost their love of learning.
Yeah, yeah. I wrote an article maybe a month ago, 2 months ago, called "Learning and Living Are Inseparable," and exactly what you said, that it is impossible to live without learning something along the way, right? That's what true curiosity, true education is, right? Is learning. It's not. Yes. It doesn't only happen in a in a drab cinder block building at desks.
Yes.
Right. So
learning is stunted in that environment. I believe learning is stunted in that environment. You know, when did being in a classroom become the real world? Never. Never. Like, people are like, well, they're not in the real world, and I'm like, they live in the real world. They're in the real world every day. Like, when did being in a classroom become the real world? When did that happen? Yeah. I don't know.
So what were some of the things that your children, as children, young children, that they were interested in when they were young?
That's interesting, because our Natalie was always very extroverted and full of energy and loved people, and loved numbers, was so into numbers and into math. And as the years went on, like, by the time she was in high school, she actually asked me to get her a math tutor for calculus. And she went into the mortgage industry. And so she was doing very well. And she had bought her own house by 22 years old. But the mortgage industry went kaput, as you know, like, we had that big downturn. So she went into restaurant management for a while. But now she's back in the mortgage industry again. But so she was always into numbers. And so it's almost like your children are born with a bent. Like, you can actually see it in them. You can see what they're drawn to, what they love. And so just, you know, if you nurture that it will grow. It will grow. And then our daughter Carmela was always into, like, health and nutrition and exercising and skincare. And as the years went on, you know, it was the skincare, all the makeup. And she went to, after our homeschooling or unschooling, went into to be an esthetician. But the funniest thing was our son Ben. Because even though we played ice hockey, he was a goalie from age 5 until he was 17. He loved, in the kitchen, mixing up chemicals, kitchen chemistry. He was always working with chemicals and food dye and coloring. He was very artistic. And he liked, I have pictures of him at 3 doing my husband's hair, my hair. He just, wow. It was like him. So he was about, I guess he was about 15, and he said, you know, if I don't make the NHL, which that's every little boy's dream who plays ice hockey, I guess I need a plan B. And I'm like, probably that's a good idea to start thinking of a plan B. And he said, do you think Dad would mind if I went to cosmetology school? I'm like, if that's what you want to do, hey, we're right behind you. We cheer you on. So, yeah, so I guess he was about, I guess he was probably like 16 going on 17, and he felt like he's ready to go now. And I'm like, okay, so, well, most kids, to go to cosmetology school, you're going to need either like a GED, or, you know, what do you want to do with that? Like, kids, a lot of kids take like an 8-week course for the GED. And he goes, well, can I just try taking it and then see what happens? I'm like, sure. So he did. He took the GED, which really they crammed like 4 years of high school into this test, but he did very well. You know, he got his GED, and he was finished his cosmetology school before his buddies were even finished high school.
Oh, shoot. I hear that so often from on the homeschooled and unschooled kids. That's so awesome.
Yeah, and he loves it, loves it. As a matter of fact, he's flying to California next week for Sassoon school, and he's been to Miami for extra schooling and the New York Redken Exchange. Like, he has all these certifications. Like, that's the great thing about unschooling. They never want to stop learning new things. Like, they just keep going. And I see it with all my older kids, and even with the two teens that were still unschooling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I follow a lot of John Taylor Gatto. Do you follow any of his stuff?
Oh, okay.
I have the book Weapons of Mass Instruction. I still have to get to read it, but I read a lot about him. I heard a lot of his talk speeches. And one thing that he says that I really love is when he said genius is as common as dirt, because, you know, everybody's like, I hope my son becomes like Mozart, like Beethoven, like, you know, these geniuses. But the thing is that the way I look at parenting and education is, like, we don't have to do much, you know, for, like, people tend to think that kids are like blank slates and we have to put all the effort to write on these blank slates what we think they should know. right? And it's more like they are these diverse and, you know, unique individuals that have their own passions and desires. And really what we need to do is help them with resources, but mainly just get out of their way.
That's right.
Like, just let them do what they're going to do.
That is very true. That's right. And when they get stuck on something, they'll ask for your help. If they trust you, if you've been a trustworthy, you know, partner with them, they come to you when they're stuck or they need help. They, you know, it's not like, I know, like, even in the teen years, I see a lot of the young girls feeling, you know, not so close to their parent because they've had all this, like, almost like oppressive rules on them. And so they won't go for, like, help. And I'm like my girls, like, they'll come to me and say, can you help me with this? Or can you help me get to do this thing I want to do? Or, you know what I mean? They trust you because you've proven yourself trustworthy. You've respected them and respected their opinions, and you value. Sometimes they might not make the decision you would, but you still have to respect them. And that's when, you know, you're partnering. You're not like this authority over them. You're partnering with your child. And that goes, you really have to do that if you want unschooling to go well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a major aspect of authoritative parenting, which is the appeal to authority, which is like, I am the adult. I am older, stronger, more experienced than you. Therefore, you have to, you know, shut up and listen. And, you know, it doesn't matter what you think, right? I'm more experienced and bigger and stronger. And also, that's also the argument for spanking too, right? It's like I get to tell you what to do. And so it's a really an unequal situation. And the same thing when you go to government school, it's an unequal situation. It's a you know, there's the authority figure that hands down the information, and then there's the subjects, the students that receive, memorize, regurgitate onto a test. And it's so sad because, like what you said, you know, I don't view myself as an authority. I view myself as an equal, like as an advisor. Even, you know, if they want to ask me, they can ask me. I'll give them my advice, but they don't have to take it, right? So,
right.
And hopefully they can see the value of your advice, because just by, you know, if they don't follow it, then there'll be natural consequences. Not that you're going to do something to them, but that it's
right.
Your advice is so valuable that they would want to follow it.
Right. And you give them all the information. That's really important. Like, communication is so important in unschooling, and giving them information. Like, things as simple as, like, brushing their teeth, let's say. Like, from a young age, we get fun flavored natural toothpaste for, even before their teeth come in, and just kind of get in the habit of, like, you know, tickling their things, and they think it's fun. So if you start when they're young, making things fun and exciting and giving them a choice about it, then they're not going to buck. Like, so when they do get their teeth, you're like, we would ask our kids, can we brush your teeth now? Like, is that okay? Like, cause then I think when it's like forced upon them, they want to back away from it. So long story short, just by, you know, us having good habits, them watching us, you know, they wanted to brush their teeth, but there's other ways. Like, I know unschoolers who don't force their kids to brush their teeth, and they don't want to brush them, but they give them, like, healthy foods that can take tartar off, and like, there's other ways. Like, they can do coconut oil pulling, and there's other ways. But I have to say, like, I'm really thankful all our adult children left home with no cavities. These two at 13 and 14 have cavities. So, you know, obviously, you know, it's just respecting them enough to not be forcing yourself on them. That's their body. But we give them the information too. Like, well, if, you know, if you don't want to brush your teeth, this is what could happen. Or, you know, if you don't want to eat these healthy foods, although we've never had restrictions on foods or anything like that. But it's funny because my children tend to gravitate towards healthier, like, foods, I think, that nourish their bodies well. But we always had treats around and all that. So there's like a whole scope of it's not just unschooling. It's a whole lifestyle. Mm. Like, mm-hmm. you wouldn't want to, we don't have any restrictions as far as, like, restricting, well, you can only eat this, this, and this at this time. So it all goes hand in hand. If you want it to work well, it's really respecting them and them trusting their own body when they're hungry, what they need. Because even sugary foods, sometimes they would need that. Like, before a sporting event, their body might crave sugary foods, and they're going to need that extra energy boost. Mm-hmm. So I think if we trust – that the whole thing is trusting your child. trusting you're that unique individual child. What their body needs, they're going to crave. Mm-hmm. When their body needs to sleep, they're going to want to sleep. So it's just really trusting your child and their unique clock and what their body needs for nourishment. It's about trust.
Yeah, I love that about the trust and volunteerism. There's a principle called self ownership, which completely applies to peaceful parenting. Because when you recognize that you as an individual have self ownership, you own your body, you own everything about you is yours, right? You nourish it, you take care of it. It's yours. It's nobody else's. Therefore, children are individuals too, right? And their body is theirs. Therefore, anything that would alter their body permanently, like circumcision, some people, pierce the ears of the girls, Oh, no. I mean, that's, to me, self-ownership violation, right? And so I the circumcision thing, that's something that I kind of understood before, but when I thought about it in terms of volunteerism, it just makes sense. It's about consent. If they want to get circumcised, they're going to come to an age where they can make that decision, right? And they can choose to do that with their own body. But to do that, to make a physical permanent alteration on someone's body and then say that they're not going to remember it, that's a completely ridiculous argument. It's like you can cut the finger off of an infant and they're not going to remember it, but that doesn't make it moral.
right, that's right. Agreed. So it's really trusting they are their own person, and so I know there's some unschoolers that say, well, we unschool everything except for we don't have any sugar in the house, so they're not allowed to have sugar. Or we unschool everything except for we have to do math workbooks. Unschooling is not going to work because if your child's sitting at the table sulking over this math workbook that you're saying you have to do that before you can get up to play, they're going to buck. They're not going to want – math won't be fun for them. They're not going to like numbers like they would if you would just let them naturally learn about the numbers that are always around us. All the time. There's numbers in everything we do. Math is always all around us. So that if you want unschooling to go well, it's kind of like you have to really dive in wholehearted and make a decision that you're going to trust that child that you're looking at. Because even somebody could tell you we do this for unschooling or we do this, but really look at your own child and go trust them to know what their need is.
So
we'll go much better.
What would you say to somebody who said, you can play a little devil's advocate, what if your child just wants to play video games all day? Or what if they just want to play outside? You're just going to let them play? what would you say to somebody like that?
Oh, my goodness. I'd be like, do you know how much learning is involved in those video games? Like Minecraft. There is, I mean, they're actually using Minecraft in schools now because it's so educational. There's so many, they learn how to code. Mm-hmm. There's so many, there's so much they can learn from that. As a matter of fact, a lot of the reading for some of my kids came from playing games online all the time. There's this thing called Poptropica that my girls would have to read to get to the next level, certain things. Mm-hmm. And if they want to play all day, that's even better yet. I mean, even Peter Gray says play is the most powerful educational tool we have. I mean, so when people say that, I'm like, I'm all about it. And if that's what they want to do, if that's what their body needs right then, if that's what they feel is going to help them get to where they want to go, I'm going to cheer them on and I'm going to bring them snacks and ask them if they need anything. I'm going to make it pleasant for them. Yeah. I'm all about that.
That's so beautiful. You're going to make me cry. It's amazing how revolutionary that sounds to most people, but it's really not. And the only reason I think people bring that up is because they see in their own kids that are forced to go to these government schools, and then they come home and they give them even more homework to take away more free time at home. And then when they finish all that, all they want to do is just watch TV or play video games and just get away from it all. And then so they're like, you see, that's what they would do if they wouldn't go to public school. But the way I look at it is actually they're kind of deprogramming, calming down after being forced to do things against their will for most of the day. You know, that's what they want to do. Let them do.
Yeah. And it's funny because people who initially start unschooling really need to de-school themselves. that the parent really needs to de-school themselves and get out of that mindset, because your child's not going to trust yet that when you say, oh, okay, you can have unlimited technology, they're going to be like, does she really mean that? So they're going to like gorge on it. They're going to be like, they're not going to be able to get enough of it because they don't know if you're going to take it away from them.
Yeah,
and then the
exactly.
parent has this power struggle because then they're like, oh no, they are. That's all they want to do. And then, so then they're like, no, no more of this, you know? And so it's like this power struggle that goes on. And I see it happening all the time. And I'm like, well, wait, they kind of knew that was coming. So that's why they were gorging on it. If you really relax and de-school yourself, no kid's going to want to play video games 24 hours a day. Trust me. I have five of them. They eventually would get, you know, there's other things they want to do.
Of course,
there's
a, yeah. I
mean, there's like sports they want to play. There's ice skating they want to go. They want to meet their friends at the mall. They want to go, you know, to the zoo. They want to, you know, you're going to provide this really rich environment and make things really fun. They're going to want to go on a picnic. They're going to want to bake. They're going to want to crochet. I mean, my one daughter, Domenica, at, I guess she was 12 and she was crocheting all the time and she was making these really cute scarves, and she got the idea she was going to put them on a website and make a scarf business. And so she put it on, got her own website up, was charging $5 a scarf, and she learned a valuable lesson though, because all these people put orders in, and now her hobby became like a business, and she felt pressure.
Wait, what age did she start that business?
She was about 12.
Wow, that's great.
You know, and she had all these orders and she fulfilled them all. But after then she stopped taking orders after a time and said, you know what? Now crocheting's not fun anymore. It's like, I have to do it. So it's not fun for me. So now she'll crochet again, but it took her like a year to get over that. Like she was like, that was very, demanding of her time and everything. So she decided when she has a hobby, she's going to keep that a hobby. But things she has, wants to make a business, then she'll make it like a business. But I said, you know, what you could do is take, instead of taking so many orders, you could still keep it a hobby and enjoy it, but get paid for something you love to do.
Mm-hmm.
So now she, like, it was a life lesson for her to learn, because wow. she took too much on, like she took too much, but it was a lesson. So,
yeah,
but
yeah,
she wanted
yeah.
to fulfill her obligations. And I was really excited for her that she did do that. And, like right now she's at children are her passion. So at 13, she asked me to find her some volunteer jobs. At local, she said, could you call some local churches or some after school programs, see if they need help? So I said, sure. So I got right on it. So she did all last year. She did after school care. She was helping little children learn English who their parents just spoke Spanish. And then she was volunteering at a church nursery on Thursday mornings. And so what happened was, she's like, you know what? I think I want to be a nanny because I love kids. She said, can you find me a medical CPR course? So I did that. She just passed that recently a couple weeks ago at 14. So now she's like medically trained with CPR. She can use a defibrillator. Yes, that. And her the instructor of the class at the Red Cross, no, the American Heart Association said, oh my goodness, she did so great. Like she was with like all these like nurses and stuff. It was so cool, you know? So it's like you just really help your kids get to where they want to go. And you know, so, and this is a child that never had any limits on her technology and could have played video games all the time. But trust me, they want to do other things. Like, so.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing, I went in the Joyous, was it the Joyous Schooling or Joyous Living?
Oh, Joyfully Rejoicing.
There you go.
That's a really great website.
Yeah, really great.
Oh, right. It's beautiful. Joyce, I love her. Joyce Federal. If you want to learn a really sweet way to unschool, she's one of my unschool heroes. Joyce Federal. She writes The Joyfully Rejoicing.
Oh, it's so beautiful. I was reading some of the description, the way she describes it, and she was saying the fundamental difference between, you know, authoritarian parenting and unschooling is, you know, authoritarian parenting and going to government school basically focuses on the goal, right? It's goal-oriented, right? You know, you're doing this to get a job, to get a good, you know, to get a nice house, a nice car, and all this stuff, you know, earn a lot of money. Whereas, you know, unschooling is more about the path, right? The means, the you know,
sure.
What do you do along the way? That's more important. It's like, are you enjoying yourself along the way? Because if you're not, then what good is the goal?
Right. It's so true. It's so true. And And, you know, I never looked at, like, well, what are my children going to be? Because they are right now.
Isn't that a weird question? What are your children going to be?
Well, I don't really worry about what they're going to be because they are right now. I'm going to enjoy them every step of the way, what they are right now, you know, because they're just really beautiful human beings right here in front of me. And I'm going to look at that right now in the present.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's a way of not living in the present. Is focusing on the future all the time, you know. They're focusing on this. What are they going to be? They're going to be that, so they're not there yet. So it doesn't matter what they're doing now. We're focusing on that, you know. So it's really.
And I tell people when my brother said to me, "Oh, your kids are going to end up selling beads on a beach," and I'm like, "If that's what they want to do, if that makes them happy, I support them. If that's what they want, all we really want for our children is to be kind and loving, peaceful adults and just love what they're doing. You know, that's the important thing. You want them to just really be good human beings. You want them to, you want to fill them with like lots of encouragement, lots of love. And, you know, hopefully if we all peacefully parent, we're going to raise a generation of peaceful adults and then we're going to have a more peaceful world.
See that? So, what a revolutionary concept.
Yeah.
And you actually remind me of this economist, Jeffrey Tucker. He's a voluntarist and an anarcho-capitalist. And one of his quotes about, you know, somebody asked him, like, how do you make the world a better place? How do you improve the world? And he's like, the best way you can make the world a better place, besides peaceful parenting, you know, of course, and unschooling, is you find something that you are passionate about and interested in and skilled at, and you just do that to the best of your ability.
Yes.
You know, and if you can make a business out of it, all the better. But that's how you make the world. Just do what you're best at and what gives you the most happiness, and that will permeate into other people and make them happy. It's amazing that needs to be said.
It's true, but if you do what you love, you're really not working a day in your life. And I think what else is important to remember is, you know, to not get that mentality of I have to. I never look at like, oh, I have to do these dishes or I have to do this laundry. I look like, look what I get to do for my family. Look how I get to show them how I love them. Look how I get to make this healthy meal for my children. Like, instead of looking at like, I have to, that whole change of thought, look what I get to do. Mm-hmm. It changes everything. And I think, you know, an attitude of gratitude displaces all other emotions. So I think that's really key to a happy, joyful unschooling home too, is not saying, oh, I have to do this, but like, look what I get to do.
I know what you're going to say when I ask this question, but I still want to ask it because I want you to explain it. What's your approach to corporal punishment and spanking?
Oh, I think it's horrible. I think it shouldn't be. Why does an adult have the right to hit a small child? Like, I just think it's appalling. And I think, I'm a follower of Jesus's peaceful principles, and you would never see Jesus hit a child. And so I'm so appalled that, and that's why I don't go to, like, I'm not religious and I don't go to churches or whatever. I feel like I am part of his church, but because they teach that, and I think it's so wrong. And, but there's a lot of things that people who claim they're Christians do that I don't see in the Bible. Like the war, they think it's like war and like, no, lay down, you know, we're to like love everybody. We're not to retaliate. We're never to hurt a child. We're never to, so I don't know. So, but anyway, that's my philosophy. Like it's against the law for an adult to hit another adult. It should be against the law for an adult to hit a child. It really should. And what good is that? They're not going to like you. They're not going to trust you. You've broken the trust with them. You've broken the relationship with them.
Yeah, exactly.
You just communicate with them. Like, and you know what? Children, they don't try to do things wrong. Like if they, you know, children are so little, they're just learning. So, if they knock over the bookcase and the books fall or they spill milk, I mean, they just need to be reassured and just help them. I don't know. I think sometimes parents like get mad for things that children just do because they're just children and they can't help it. They're just learning, you know, they're learning new things all the time and they're curious. And I think, and you know, my children, one thing, they never had a temper tantrum. They never had to, when you're really into your kids, like you can kind of read them. Like you see, are they hungry? Are they tired? Are they, you know what I mean? Like you can kind of meet their need before they even have to cry for it. Or you can tell if they're, like at the food store, if I see children, like the mom says, you know, no to this, no to that, put that down, stop that. Instead of being like, oh, are you hungry? Do you need something? Like mm-hmm. how different that is and how the child wouldn't have to have a temper tantrum if like the parent could see there's a need there. They're trying to, they don't know how to voice that they're having a need. So, and I think parents spank for things that really they're just being children. It's really quite sad.
Yeah. Yeah. The double standard that you mentioned is something I say a lot. Like, you know, you hit a friend and that's assault, right? You hit your spouse, it's called domestic abuse. You hit a child, it's called discipline, right? It's legal.
It's wrong. The best way to make, you know, break the relationship or harm the relationship is to do that. I think it's wrong, really wrong.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, it's all about self-ownership and, you know, that your kids are individuals. They own their bodies. And again, like you said, they're just learning, right? So it's not like they're spiteful or malicious or doing something to intentionally anger you or, you know, just like parents tend to think like, no, he's doing that on purpose. He wants to make me angry. You know, it's just so sad. Yeah. And the other thing is most people spank, you know, when I talk about this to people, when they do it to their kids and they say they get insulted, they're like, no, there's a difference between spanking and abuse. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's almost like, you know, like the, when I spank them, my child knows that I love them. I'm spanking them because I love them. And I'm like, oh my God, what kind of a schizophrenic way of looking at things can you be? You know, because first of all, the child doesn't know the difference, right? And second of all, most parents, when they do spank, are they like calm and rational or are they angry and frustrated? Like they're not spanking when they're calm, you know, that's the other thing.
It's like wrong. I think it really should be outlawed. I think it should be illegal, just like, you know, domestic abuse, like you're saying, or you can't assault another human. Well, here's a precious child. You're so much bigger than them. Yeah, it should be illegal. I mean, not illegal because I don't really believe in that either. I think, why can't adults just realize it's wrong?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really the precursor. You know, all this you know, type of violent, authoritative parenting and spanking and corporal punishment is the precursor to going to government school and being a subject in a system mm-hmm. where you are not respected as an individual. You are part of the collective, and you're basically just taught to be, you know, cog in a wheel and just a worker, drone, you know, and not to be an individual, not to be creative and imaginative, not to be an entrepreneur, not to respect your own desires and passions at all.
Yeah, they just want you to sit down, be quiet. And that's a funny thing when people always say, oh, well, how do they get socialization? Yeah. Well, how much socialization are they getting in school when they have to sit down and be quiet and not question authority?
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, and I love that my children, like, they're respectful, but they definitely will question things. Like, if they see something not right, like, they have no trouble, even if it's an adult saying, I don't agree with that. Like, I love that. I want them to say that. They're respectful. They're not saying it in a mean or unkind way, but they're saying, no, that's, I don't agree with that at all. You know? So I love that about them. And I want them to question.
Yeah. One of the saddest things that I see is when a parent brings their child into like some public place, like a medical office or some, maybe, something like that. And then they tell the child, sit there and be quiet. And then the child does exactly what the parent wants, sits there and is very quiet, very obedient until the parent comes back. And when I look at that, I'm like, how much violence and spanking must there be and shouting in the household for the child to be that obedient? Mm-hmm. Right? And it's very scary to think about that because that's not how children should be. They shouldn't be like they're in boot camp just taking orders from like their superior.
Right. Well, it's a funny thing about that. My one daughter, when she was 8, she was getting a physical. She had to get a physical for something. I forget what it was. I guess play on a sport team or something. And the doctor said, well, I have to check here. And my daughter grabbed her arm and said, no. And I mean, no. And she's like, you know, it was so funny. I'm like, go, Giovanna. Yeah, I was like, yeah, like, yeah. I'm like, she said no. If she doesn't want you to touch her there, then it's no.
That's really great.
Yeah,
like my kids in when we go into public, my you know, again, like you said, I have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old, and they have no problem talking to adults. Really no problem. They're not afraid to like, we're just walking around the park, and my daughter, 3-year-old daughter, she's yelling, you know, that's my brother Marcus, and I'm 3 years old, and I'm wearing a nice dress, and this is my scooter, you know, and she's just talking to people, and I just love it. You know, she has no fear of other people, you know, no fear of adults, and I think that's how kids are born. They're born without a fear of authority, right?
Right.
And that's beaten into them by authoritarian parenting.
Yeah.
Right?
Right, and that doesn't really go anywhere good for life, like really for them to be able to, like you're saying, be creative, use their gifts and talents, and to be able to communicate what's inside them. You know, they need to have a voice. They need to be able to speak their mind, and we should respect that. Like, I really believe children should be respected and honored. I mean, they're like our future. Like,
they are our future. Yeah.
Yeah. That really. So we need to really, you know, build them up that way and not to be so compliant, or I don't want that. I want them, I don't want to say, oh, be careful. I want to say, be brave, be courageous.
I agree. I like that.
Yeah.
So tell me how your family, like, were you raised, like, how were you raised regarding unschooling or this approach or spanking?
Yeah. I'm one of 8 kids, and it was a completely different life. I won't get into any details, but I wanted my children to have the childhood I always dreamed of.
Mm.
And I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Okay.
Because it was really rough.
Wow.
It was very hard. It was a very hard childhood.
And what about like when you were in the process of homeschooling or unschooling them, how did your family react to that?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of my siblings are teachers and went into teaching and vice principals at public schools.
Wow.
And
they did not
like it very much at all.
Wow.
But ironically, my one brother, who's a vice principal at a school in Pennsylvania now, he started a program. He really does have a heart for kids, and God bless him. I'm so glad. He really does love kids. But he started this program for children that would end up in like a youth detention type place. They were children at risk and children who had maybe committed some minor crimes, and they would have went to like a school where they had to live there. But my brother said, let me try and help these kids in a different way. And he actually asked me about the homeschooling or unschooling because he wanted to individualize curriculum to them. He thought maybe they could do better instead of feeling so lost. And so he really came to me years into it, mm-hmm. and said, you know, how do I do that? How do I like try to make a curriculum for them individually, you know? And I said, well, look at that particular team, you know, what are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? You know, that kind of thing. So, you know, meet them where they're at and, you know, try to get in there, like really communicate with them, really listen twice as much as you're speaking to them. You'll know like how to meet that need. If you do that. And it turned out to be a really successful program.
Cool.
For him. So it got me like a little bit of, they didn't give me such a hard time after that.
Wow.
So.
And when you were doing it, the homeschooling and unschooling, were you in contact with other homeschooling families? Were there many around where you were living and doing it?
Not in the elementary years. Of the older 3, there were like, people just, they didn't understand it. They didn't get it. There wasn't a lot around. It was kind of wondering, how's this all going to work out? How's it all going to go? We really weren't sure. They didn't have any like unschooling friends or even homeschooling friends, not even homeschooling friends.
Wow.
And so it was like, but we kept them involved in a lot of like community sports. Like our older daughters played softball, even though, you know, there's a lot of community sports, and they met friends in the neighborhood they could see after school and things like that. They never felt like they were really, the only thing my girls were worried about was in high school, are we going to get asked to a prom? That was like the biggest, so funny. Well, they got asked to every prom in like a 20-mile radius. It was so funny. They went to more proms than probably anybody who ever went to high school.
They were asked. Okay, cool.
Oh yeah. They didn't miss out on any of that. And, Yeah, great. So sometimes I always say my kids were too social in some ways, you know? But yeah, that was their main like worry. Are we going to get asked to a prom? You know? So, wow. But yeah.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, I'm constantly in contact with, you know, a few homeschooling and unschooling families around here. And you know, we're always out and about in museums and parks and playgrounds and, you know, trails and, you know, going on the mountain, the beach and just, you know, in the forest and just doing stuff. And I love it. I just love letting them free play in the woods. It's like what better way to learn about stuff than like today they saw, you know, a spider with like looked like eggs on it. And then they had like they saw a fish carcass, but like just the bones. And then so they were marveling at that. It was just wonderful.
It's great today. I mean, with now my teens, they have a ton of homeschooled and unschooled friends.
Oh, cool.
So they're always doing things like we always have people over to our neighborhood. Like we have swim parties all the time here. And it's so great in the day. Like we actually say now, like summer's here. Now everything we love to do is crowded. Like, you know, it's like, cause we like to go to like in Florida, they have the water parks open all year round and stuff. So we can go in the day when nobody's there. The beaches are clear. You know, now we avoid them on the weekends. Like in the winter, we avoid them like on the weekends, but now we have to, it's just so crowded. Everybody's out of school. It just really mucks things up.
It's like you want people just stay in school. We're enjoying ourselves.
You're like on our turf now. We like it all. You know, it's like they have a lot of school friends too that they hang with, and especially on their like my Domenica on her sports teams, like a lot of her team buddies, they go to school, so she hangs with them at different times and too. So it's all good. Yeah, they can get along with anybody, my girls. But they're very social. Like I love with these two that there is so many activities for the homeschoolers and unschoolers. So they're very involved with that too.
Awesome.
It's great. Yeah, you're very blessed to have it at this time and where everything's there's so many support groups and so many avenues to it was so different back in the 80s.
Oh,
like you
God.
Were just really alone. You were really and people didn't know what you were doing. They were like, "Is that legal?" That's what they would say. You can school your own kids. Like, and they picture you like 8 a.m. till 5 sitting at the kitchen table. Like, no, it's not like, no. They are living and learning and living all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny that you say, is it legal? Because that's one of the basic ideas of volunteerism is they say that the slave asks, is it legal? And the free man asks, is it right? Right. Or is it moral? Right. And because that's the true question, right? It's not about laws, you know?
Oh, I love that. I never heard that, but that's so true.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Is it legal? It's like if you're just going by legality to establish your morality, you know, in the past, chain slavery was legal, right? The Holocaust was legal. You know, the segregation, Jim Crow laws were legal, right? The Stalin purge where millions of people died was legal. Mao's again, purge, millions of people died, legal, right? So legality is not absolutely not a basis for morality. It's diametrically opposed. They're polar opposites.
Oh, right. Oh, wow. I'm just like, that's like, that's so true. I never thought about that, but that's so true. It is. You know, and I want to tell parents who are skeptical, there's a few books that I would love for them to get. Like if they're like, how does this all work out? Like you don't have to reinvent the wheel. There's this really great book. It's not big at all. It's very thin. It's by Allison McKee. It's called Homeschooling Our Children, Unschooling Ourselves. She really unschooled, but she wrote this a long time ago, probably in the 90s. And, it's so funny because I don't know if you can see the picture of the kids on it, but they're definitely 90s kids.
That's funny.
The 90s hair doing all. But she was great. Like, I love how she did this book. It's like, I don't know. It's just really well written. And it's called Homeschooling Our Children, Unschooling Ourselves. Because I know parents who, they probably can't wrap their minds around the unschooling. Mm. Like, how does that all work? How do they learn to read? How do they learn to write?
Yeah.
And they actually learn those things by doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we learn anything. That's how we as adults learn. And when we're interested in something and ready to learn something and want to learn something, we're going to learn it well. And it's true knowledge. It becomes true knowledge. And it's not like we're memorizing things and then regurgitate them for a test to get a grade, and all these outward motivators, that's wrong too. All these gold stars and stickers and grades and even diplomas. I mean, really, when you think about it, like, what you should do things because you want to do them, not exactly. to get an outward.
Exactly.
There's a good book about that. Alfie Kahn. Did you read his book, Alfie Kahn, Punished by Rewards?
I think my wife got that a while ago.
That's a really good book. And you know what else is really important for unschooling parents? Like, everything falls into place, like with chores even. Like, people say, well, how do your kids do chores? Or how do they? I'm like, they don't do chores. Like, if they want to help me, I'm really grateful. And it's so, like, from the youngest age, like, because you're, like, loving them and you're helping them and you're meeting their needs, they want to do that for you. They want to help you, you know? And it's like, I used to come in the garage with the groceries and they'd jump out of the car and start helping me just bring them in or, you know, it's like really sweet.
It's so you're beautiful. Helping each
other.
I love it.
Yeah, you're helping each other, you know? And then some of my children are neater than others as far as, you know, how I like things because I am me, myself. I like things neat, but that's my issue. That's not my kids' issue. Like but some of my kids are neat like me and they like order. And then there's others that aren't so neat. And I say to them, would you mind if I straightened up your room or do you feel like doing your room? You know,
Yeah.
And if they say no, I'm going to respect that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if they, you know what I mean? Like, and some of them that are particularly like a lot of stuff around, I'll be like, can I help you organize it? And most of the times they say yes. Mm-hmm. And that's great. I like that.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm not going to like force it or say, oh, well, I'll give you this if you do this. Or like, I want them to do it just out of a cheerful heart.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I love it. You know, that brings to mind another volunteer's concept, which is good ideas do not require force. To basically distill what you said about, you know, the stars and the punishment and the rewards and punishment, you know, that's basically what it boils down to, right? Good ideas do not require force. And if your ideas require force, then your ideas are worthless.
That's right. That's right.
Which is the essence of every single law and text. You know, tax that is, you know, by the threat of punishment.
Yeah.
Right.
It's where is that going to go? It doesn't go anywhere good. It really doesn't. So it's just better if people just do the right thing just because it's the right thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
And because they want to do the right thing. Because, you know, not to get any reward or accolades or anything, you know, it's just because it brings us joy, I think, too. It makes us feel very satisfied as humans when we do something that benefits others or things that we can feel great joy about, like when we feel we've done something productive and good. You can't put like a reward on that because it's something internal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just is a good feeling. It's my kids. I love they do things just because they want to and it makes them inside. It makes them happy. You know.
Yeah, my kids, they love to help me cook, for example. Every time I'm cooking, chopping vegetables, my daughter, 3-year-old, she wants to peel the garlic. Yeah. You know, if I'm making guacamole, they love to stir, like I'm taking the avocado meat out of the avocado, and my son loves to mash it, you know. It's, they love to help, you know, and that's how they learn, by helping, you know.
That is so true, that they learn a ton that way. And, you know, and it's a shame because if somebody's in a rush or something, they're going to be like, no, I'll do it. But really, that's the best thing. Let them help when they want to, because then they continue that on. You can't one day say, oh, now you're 14. Like, can you help me do this? No, you didn't let them do it all those years. You know, they're not going to want to do it happily.
Yeah.
So that's great. They learn so much. Like, and that a lot of the fractions that our kids know, it's because they wanted to help baking, you know, the fractions.
Right.
You know, like I said, they love to figure out the tip at the restaurant. So percents, they're like, well, do you think she should get a 15% or 20% tip? And I'm like, what do you think? And then they'll figure out the percentage. Like I said, numbers are all around us. Math is all around us. One thing I did with our kids is I would make a math grid. Like, I'd put 1 to 12 at the top, the multiplication sign, and 1 to 12 on the sides. And they used to, I just would leave it out on the kitchen table. And so that, like, at first they were like, they could say around five or six, maybe six. And they were curious about it. And so they would be like, well, if I did two twos and then they would put the four in and then they would, you know, count by threes or, you know what I mean? They were figuring it out. They wanted to know about it. They were curious about it. And so it's so funny because one thing led to another, and pretty soon they were racing each other to see who could fill it in the quickest. Like, because I put a fresh new one. I made like copies of it. You know, so I had copies and copies of it. So I would just put a fresh one every day on the kitchen table. If they played with it, fine. If they didn't, fine. But I laughed when they started making it a competition between themselves. And they never sat to memorize, you know, the multiplication tables, but they did end up learning them that way. Just that fun way.
So you're saying that you didn't test them and then ground them or send them to detention if they didn't pass the test?
No. Just left it out. They're very curious. They really do want to know. And with the whole reading thing, I'd get like easy readers and we'd sit on the couch and snuggle, like, you know, each children around me. And sometimes I would be reading and they'd be following, and I would call it popcorn reading. So I would stop. And whoever would pop in with the word, they, like, even if they had to do an inference, like infer, if they didn't know the word, they would infer what should be there. And I'd be like, oh my gosh, that's right. That's great. Like, you know, it's like, so you just make it like fun for them. And before you know it, they're taking off reading. I mean, so just things like that. Like, I'm trying to think, like, with reading, getting like easy readers all around. And they're, like I said, children are curious. And when they're ready to read, they just do it. They learn reading by reading. Spelling by spelling. My one daughter, Giovanna, used to bring me a list of like 100 words. And she's like, Mom, I want you to give me a spelling test. And I'm like, you do? Like,
wow. Okay.
Yeah. I'm like, okay. So she would like sit there and she must have a photographic memory, I'm starting to think. Because in 5 minutes, she'd be like, I'm ready. I looked at all the words. I'm ready for my test. I'm like, okay. Well, she would get like all 100 of them right. And I'd be like, wow. You must have a photographic memory. Because, you know.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, children are funny. They'll surprise you when you don't even expect it. Like for her to come and say, Mom, I want you to give me a spelling test. And she's so funny because with all her friends, like on Instagram and all, she's always correcting their grammar. Well, you have to have mercy on them because they go to school. So they probably don't want to learn that. I'm like,
they're a reflection of their education.
Yeah. She's like, Mom, they don't even know they're there and there. And I'm like, yeah, and I'm like,
that's
okay,
so funny.
Be patient with them.
So, I know it's really hilarious how you know people who are educated in government school are so critical of homeschoolers and unschoolers. Yet, like you said, in so many ways, they are because of their love of learning. You know, not because they're forced to, but just they love to learn this stuff. They're just people, excellent writers, you know, excellent poets or essayists. And I mean, let me ask you, with your kids, do you remember, like, you know, roughly the ages that they started to learn themselves how to read?
They were all different. Our son at 5 was asking me, like, about the alphabet and the letters and what sounds they make, long vowels, short vowels. He was very curious about all that. And I'm telling you, in 2 weeks, he was like reading the encyclopedia. Like what? he just like picked it up. He just flew with it.
Wow.
And our one daughter, now she was really struggling with reading, but I found out she actually had like a learning disability. Mm. So words were getting mixed up, and she had what's called mixed dominance, which makes you ambidextrous.
Huh.
So sometimes it creates genius, and you know, the right side and the left side will. Like Albert Einstein had mixed dominance.
Oh, really? Okay.
But sometimes it can create a lot of learning issues. And so for her to learn something, she needed to see it visually and hear it auditory. So she really struggled with the reading. But I remembered she was going into ninth grade and she was picking up the Great Illustrated Classics, which probably would be on school terms like a third grade like reading level, and it just clicked one day. Like, but I didn't get like all freaked out about it or like nervous or whatever. And then once it all clicked for her. And she's a great reader now. She's very she's an avid reader. She loves to read all kinds of things. Like, so, and from there, it was before the internet came out. So she would go get library books, like on Anne Frank, and she wanted to know all about the Holocaust. And so once she could read, like, she really ran with it. She wanted to learn a lot of things when reading became, but, you know, had she been in school, they wouldn't have had the patience. They would have probably labeled her.
Yeah, exactly.
She would have made her feel bad about herself.
Exactly.
When she was ready, it all clicked. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, it could be like, so with all five kids, it was all different ages. And I don't think we should be fast to be like, oh no, this isn't working. She's not reading. And she's going to, you know, she's like, you know, I'm saying ninth grade level. Like, she was probably around 13 when everything clicked.
Okay.
With the reading.
Yeah.
So, you know, it could be, I don't know. I just would hate to see, like, had she been in school, what could have happened with
yeah.
that.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Definitely.
Because, like, she would have felt really bad about herself. But I did end up having her, I took her to a psychologist, for an educational testing, just to see what I could do to help her, mm-hmm. you know? Because I could tell she was struggling with some things. And here she had this mixed dominance. And it turned out to be a blessing. I went because when she went to take her state boards for her career, she needed a reader, it's called, at her, and because it was documented that, you know, so she had access to special accommodations. So sometimes, like, it's not a bad idea to go privately to somebody if you feel like your child's kind of struggling with something, you know, you can, you know, help them, you know, help them with that. Like, don't, and that's what we did. And then we knew that, like, what we could do to help her better, like, you know, and so there's nothing wrong with asking for outside help if the time comes where you're like, okay, there's, and I kind of knew there was something the matter. I should, like, when she was two, she was saying, mommy, come here. And she was saying, bus stopper. And I'm like, I don't understand. What are you saying, honey? And then she brought me to the dustbuster. So even then, things were getting jumbled. You know, so she just needed a lot of extra, like, patience, a lot more love, mm-hmm. and just, you know, helping her. And she's great now. She's soaring.
That's wonderful. Is that a form of dyslexia?
It sort of is in a way, but it's more like a processing. Your brain can't, you need, like, extra time to process information, mm-hmm. and then to, I'm trying to, like, it probably is a form of dyslexia because letters do get jumbled in the mixed dominance. Yeah. So I would say, yeah, it probably is some form. I mean, they never said that, but I would say it's very similar because things get jumbled up.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's really great. I mean, you're right. You know, kids achieve their milestones at all different ages, you know, and that has no bearing on their aptitude later in life at all. You know, it's like,
it doesn't.
You know, some kids learn to walk at like 6 months. Some kids learn to walk at 15 months. But does that mean that the 6 month or 7 month old kid is going to be a marathon runner and the 15 month old kid is going to like limp? No.
You know? Yeah. They just are all unique. They all learn at different times, and when they're ready to learn something, they do. And so that's the whole premise in unschooling. Like, look at your individual child and then just partner with them and help them get to where they want to go.
Excellent. Yeah, that's really, really great. So before we go, do you have any other books that you want to show the listeners?
Now, if somebody has older children, this is one of my favorites. It's called The Teenage Liberation Handbook, How to Quit School and Get a Real Life and Education. It's by Grace Llewellyn, and I've probably bought 50 of these books. I'm friends with Grace on Facebook, and I told her that I should probably start getting free ones now after you buy 50, because I hand them out to every 13-year-old that hates school.
Wow,
and
great.
The kid loves me. I don't know about the parents, but the kids love me for it.
Wow, and, great.
Yeah, and then they work on their parents to try to get their parents to sign them out of school.
Wow.
It's a good one. Really good resources.
Cool.
Really good resources. And then another one is The Uncollege Alternative. I don't know if you can see that.
Yes, I've heard of Uncollege.
Oh, good. Yep, Uncollege. Love Uncollege because, you know, college is a funny thing anymore. It's, you really have to weigh, is it worth the investment?
Yeah. Actually, I wanted to ask you about that too with your kids.
Yeah, really do, because I know so many of my older kids' friends who went to college, they can't find jobs and what they went for. They're back home living with their parents. They're like 32. Like, my daughter's 32. some of her guy friends are 32 living at home. Mommy's still doing the wash. And I'm like, no.
And massively in debt in addition.
Yes. And have all this debt so they can't move out. So really, it's like, I'm not a big fan of college. I mean, unless you're going for a particular thing that you know is needed. You know, like special ed is going to be needed because unfortunately so many children have autism today. One in 30 vaccinated boys is autistic. It's so sad. It's staggering, actually.
Yeah.
So a special ed is going to be needed. And, you know, there's certain things that are going to be needed that you would need college for. But all these, this whole thing with like, oh, our kids have to go to college. Like, it's not really worth the investment anymore. And the debt that's accrued, it's like they just can't get ahead. And I don't,
it's like a mortgage sometimes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I know. And, oh, you know what I'm really into about this mortgage for you young people today? I tell my kids all the time, the tiny house movement. I love that.
Oh, I heard of that.
Oh, my goodness. I just love it. I mean, if we did it all over again, I mean, my husband and I, when we started out, we were singing, even though we ain't got money, I'm so in love with you, honey. So we would buy handyman specials and flip them. We didn't know at the time it was flipping houses, but we would just buy these houses that were like a complete wreck. And we would like be living in them and fixing them and popping out babies. I don't even know how. And it was like so funny. I'm like, I don't know. But it was a good investment. We made, you know, it was a good investment actually. But I love this tiny house movement because you can, you want to be mortgage free. Like the less debt you have, the more free you are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we were always like, It's so odd today because my the realtors will tell you, oh, you can afford this. And I always tell my kids, never buy anything more than 1 week's salary. If you buy anything more than 1 week's salary, you are going to be house poor. You're going to not be able to live. So, but now they'll tell you can afford like your whole salary. And that's like, then you're house poor and you can't do anything and you just can't get out of debt.
Yeah.
You know, so we're like, and if you don't have the money, don't buy it. Save for it. You know, that's all another thing that can entrap people.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's like, it all goes hand in hand. Like the unschooling is a very free, it's freedom for your kids, but it's also freedom for you because you find out like what you can do without, like, what do you really need? Mm-hmm. And cause all children really need is time, T-I-M-E, time and love and nurturing. That's really, they don't need a lot of stuff because like everything in nature's like you, like you're saying, you went to the park, you went to the forest, you watch the ants crawl, you, yeah. You know, you go to the creek, you catch fish with bread and corn on a string. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of money. It just takes a lot of time and love.
Yeah. Dedication. Yeah. The unschoolers are the one that's doing the difficult job and the kids, the parents sending their kids to government schools. They're like, They're the ones treating the government school basically like a babysitter. You're like, right. I don't have time to deal with you. I got to get to work. Just go here and I'll see you later.
Right. Yeah. Right. So it's just great. It's really a great, I think children really thrive and blossom and there's like, it's not one size fits all.
No.
They're
no.
Unique individuals.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's what government is. One size fits all. You know, one law for everyone, one tax for everyone. You know, it's like, and same thing government school, for everyone, you know, standard curriculum, standardized testing, everything. It's just nauseating. So do you have, is any other books you have there for to show or?
Well, if there's any people that follow Jesus, this was a good one for them. Just his peaceful principles. It's called Christian Unschooling, and it's about his peaceful principles of how he drew pictures in the sand and, you know, told parables and very gentle. It's a very gentle book for, I don't know how many of your listeners follow the Lord, but to me, it was like, it was really sweet. It's a really sweet book of gentle parenting and a gentle way to, cause parents have this like dream in their head of what it's going to be like, but then there's like a reality. You know, I think, or not even dream, maybe it's a nightmare actually. They think, oh, I'm going to have to like sit at the table for this many hours and I'm going to have to be like spoon feeding information into my kids or no. So this book like is very freeing of that. It's like, you know, no, like just be there to like help your child when they ask and tell a parable or, you know, write in the sand, show them pictures. It's really sweet and gentle.
Excellent. So, beautiful. Any websites you want to like? Some of your favorite websites?
My favorite websites would be Sandra Dodd, Radical Unschooling. I also really like Joyce Federal, Joyfully Rejoicing website. And what's my other favorite one? On what they should do is go on Facebook and type in unschooling in the search. There's so many unschooling. I'm trying to think who else I love.
And you also follow Dana Martin stuff.
Right? Oh, yeah, Dana Martin. She's a good one. Yeah, she does the peaceful parenting and, you know, no forcing or coercing. And, yeah, so that's another good one.
Can you elaborate a little bit on the difference between the approach of Dana Martin and Sandra Dodd?
Well, Sandra is her kids are all grown now, her unschoolers. And so she's been like a pioneer too. And she has a lot of really – it's very thought-provoking. It is radical unschooling. It is a radical unschooling. And, but she can get, people like think it can be harsh. She can be harsh, but it's only because she's not being harsh. She's really getting you to think why, you know, words really matter and to really, but people like look at that as like harsh. Dane is like softer and like approach is more, gentle. But I know Sandra's doing it. Like, it's really benefiting the children. Like how she like gets the parents to really think about what they're saying. It really benefits their kids. So, but it's like, but they actually like parents feel like they're being like, how do I want to say? Well, they're being challenged in their thoughts. And sometimes like people don't like that. It's like abrasive sometimes if they don't really want to hear that, you know, but it really benefits the children. What she's saying is really good for kids. Like I think, you know, but Jenna's just, Dana's just more gentle with her approach to helping, you know, the unschooling. That would be the difference.
Cool. Okay. No, I just wanted to clarify that because, you know, I did interview Dana Martin in the past, and she's a really wonderful, amazing woman. Very, like you said, very gentle, sweet, kind-hearted. And one of her things is, you know, one of the things she says I remember is kindness is revolutionary. I'm like, isn't that an amazing thing? How can kindness be revolutionary? Like, does that really need to be said? You know, it's just
Isn't that something? I know. And I always say that kindness matters.
Yeah.
Kindness matters. It does. But to think that it's revolutionary, I mean, where has our society went to that's revolutionary? I mean, that should be like in us, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But that's why like unschooling can create those, like we're leaving that legacy for our kids and then hopefully their kids and their kids' kids. Like we're going to leave a legacy of kindness.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about it. It's about, you know, creating a more peaceful world by educating the next or like, you know, raising moral, empathetic people, peaceful people to populate. And hopefully I heard it mentioned by another friend of mine who's also unschooling. He's like, it's like a soft form of eugenics because we're raising by changing in order to change the world, we're raising peaceful, moral and empathetic people. Right.
Yes.
not through anything harsh or violent, but we're out, you know, we're attempting to outbreed the violent people basically.
Amen to that. Amen. You know, and love is our resistance.
Yeah.
Love is our resistance. You know, it's like, I don't, love does conquer all.
Mm-hmm.
I think it will. In the end, it will.
Yeah. Beautiful. Love it. I love the message. Beautiful conversation. Betty Ann, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. So this is if anybody wants to donate to the show, be more than welcome. We accept Bitcoin, PayPal, and any other form of value. If you want to send gold and silver through the mail, good luck. But I will find a way if you really want to send it. but yeah, any form of donation, monetary support would be much appreciated because you know I do this as a labor of love and. It's nice to get some support for encouragement, right? We all need some encouragement. Although I really enjoy, you know, putting this content out there. So thank you very much, Betty Ann, for the wonderful conversation. So this is Peaceful Anarchism. on the Voluntary Virtues Network and theconsciousresistance.com and theseedsofliberty.com. Wishing everyone have a wonderful day. Take care. Bye.